Good morning, everybody.
How's everyone doing out there today?
So, John Harbaugh out in Baltimore. I wanted to jump right into that. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll get to Bills, Jags, Sabres win last night. Made it a little close, but ultimately get a 5-3 win.
I was not very appreciative of that final 6 minutes there.
No.
Really not a fan of that one.
But I did want to dive into the John Harbaugh stuff, mainly because I think there could be not a connection to Buffalo, but I think if you're a certain kind of fan, you look at that move. 18 years. Super Bowl win in 2012. Missed the playoffs one time, and it seems like the whole thing crumbled. I mean, we've seen stuff in the Baltimore Sun about, you know, arguably a hit piece on Lamar Jackson. It sounded like, you know, from stuff I've been reading and listening to today and yesterday, sounds like a lot of the locker room kind of gave up on Harbaugh, sort of moved on from him. They were done. I don't know. Just it both came out of nowhere, but in the same vein, sort of didn't. Like, we've talked about Harbaugh a lot the last 2 years of constantly blowing leads. You know, they're an uber-talented team that kind of just can't get it done. In the exact same vein as the Bills, they've been one of, if not the most successful team in the regular season over, like, this last five-year period and haven't made a Super Bowl.
They also, though, they have a tendency to not win many playoff games either. With
right.
This current iteration.
Since 2012, since winning that Super Bowl, going 4-0 in those playoffs, Harbaugh was 4-7 since in the playoffs.
And he's only got three wins with an uber-talented quarterback in Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the context matters. Everything always has context matters, right? And with Baltimore, it is, you have not been winning playoff games with Lamar Jackson. And sometimes it's been Jackson crumbling in the postseason. Mm-hmm. That's why he has an unfortunate tag on him at that point. But some of it's also very much your management, your coaches making baffling decisions. When they make it to the conference championship, they refuse to run the football despite being one of the best rushing teams that there was.
Yeah, a complete flip from what they'd done the entire year and that playoff run in itself.
This season, you saw it multiple times. Why is Derrick Henry not in the game late?
Most recently, the New England game.
And ultimately, where every loss mattered, this was it. I cannot say that I'm surprised in even the slightest. Because, yeah, this is something that you have said that I've really subscribed to in the past. An NFL head coach ultimately serves to one day get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick was not immune to that work.
No, and I think I listened to, I think it was Adam Schefter saying it yesterday, like he sort of compared Harbaugh to Belichick in the same way of like, this is probably the biggest firing we've seen at the head coaching position since Belichick. I probably agree with that.
The only team that seems to clearly not subscribe to that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And look at them spinning their tires in mud like they're a pig happy to roll in it.
Yeah. I mean, they did make the playoffs again, but you're right. I mean, like, they seem to be the only franchise that doesn't hire a guy with sort of the feeling of, we're probably going to fire you at some point. Like, very few of you, same with players, get to walk off into the sun. Very few of you. And the reason why I bring it up, too, is, you know, Jeremy Fowler, he had a piece, and it mentioned, too, right at the end that around the league, there's this sort of, not internally with the Bills, but around the league, there's wonderings if Bills ownership is getting impatient with Sean McDermott. And the reason why the Harbaugh firing, I guess maybe is hitting closer to home for me, is that similar feeling that Buffalo and Baltimore have, where you have the uber-talented quarterback, you keep making the playoffs. Again, Baltimore doesn't this year, but you saw how quickly then they moved off Harbaugh. And then that's the thing. Does it just take that one big miss and all of a sudden, all right, let's move out. Let's start this all over. You know, I was seeing Marcus Mosier, who has been on the station as well, covers mainly the Cowboys, but does a lot of film study as well. He's not a Harbaugh fan at all. I mean, he's like, if it's the year 2026, if you're not hiring a guy that gives you, you know, a tactical advantage, because Harbaugh himself is a special teams guy. Like, that's where he, you know, created his sort of legacy before becoming a head coach. What are you doing here? And I sit here too, kind of seeing the same, you know, I sit here listening to that and I'm like, usually that means offense. You know, if you've got the quarterback, go get an offensive guy that's going to get the most out of him. We've heard that for years now with McDermott and Allen. And, of course, a conversation I don't love, but I think it is fair to have because this is sports. It's not always fair, and these are ending up to be discussions, even if it's not warranted. How, you know, Colin Coward yesterday kind of made a lot of people in Buffalo upset because, you know, quote unquote, you can't lose to Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence and Liam Cohen. You can't lose to Bo Nix. You can't, right? Like, all the pressure's on the Bills.
Who would have thought, because you mentioned Coward, mm-hmm. I need to get this one out here.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that Nick Wright would be a somewhat voice of reason?
I know, yeah. I know.
Because Nick Wright, in response to that, goes, how often do you hear about a six seed being upset mm-hmm. in the first round of the playoffs, and they choked? I guess we are really in the upside down because Nick Wright is a voice of reason for the Bills.
It's just like this whole season has been sort of this wild ride. The playoffs, though, it's only Wednesday, but this whole week already kind of feels like, number one, in a way, I'm almost preparing to lose, and I hate that feeling. But also, it seems like a lot of people in the media are almost preparing for the shots they're going to fire if the Bills do lose. A game, which, by the way, is a pick'em now. Joe and Jeremy were talking about that the line is staying where it started, with the Bills being a slight, if not even, favorite. I don't know. I'm curious to see how this season ends. I don't know if the Bills will end up keeping their full staff and go with it again. It does not look like Babich or Brady are going to be hothead coaching names. It's not really all that surprising based off the season. But that also seemed to be one of Harbaugh's big downfalls. It appeared that he wanted to keep the exact same staff. I saw a report today from The Athletic that Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator, Lamar Jackson, their relationship got awkward. Zach Orr is the defensive coordinator through two seasons, I think, has been a disaster.
Right.
And you can say all you want about how much talent they have. The stats don't point to it. The stats point to Kyle Hamilton is basically the best, and everyone else around him is not any good. It's just, it's so curious. And this is going to be a conversation for if the Bills season ends on Sunday. But the Harbaugh stuff just kind of, it jumped out to me. I think especially, too, the immediate reports were that he was being reached out to by a number of teams that did not
more
equal
than the amount of openings.
I think it's Miami or the Jets, but it is what it is.
I do want to subscribe a little bit to Jeremy's conspiracy theory that he put up this morning and about the call coming from inside the house, because I want to subscribe to it, if only because we have seen a little bit of the interesting dynamic between coach and GM this year that has not been there in years past. More or less, just to talk more about this. Say the Bills get smacked around, right? A reality I definitely do not want to face or look at. And maybe if I put it out there, it won't happen. Even though I know that my words are inconsequential. But say that it happens. Is there some sort of way for a certain person to take the heat off of him and get rid of the other guy?
I mean, that's what,
because the head coaching vacancy is what is available.
Yeah, I mean, that's what ultimately is going to end up happening. I think a lot of these situations is we've got to start pointing fingers. If the heat starts to turn up on anybody, I think it becomes a bit of a cutthroat business. I don't say that negatively. I think that's very normal in these very high-pressure job sports, obviously among them. You start pointing fingers. Look, we kind of just went through this with the Sabres. There's a very good chance that people inside that building started to point fingers at Kevin Adams going, I ain't going down with him. It's on him, not me. I'm good at my job. He's not. That happens.
It happens. And that is something that is natural. I've seen a couple things of like, oh, if I'm Brandon Bean, I'm talking to John Harbaugh tomorrow, or, you know, if he doesn't sign by Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, what would be the dynamic here if something were to change? How would it evolve? I'm going to tell you right now, I definitely don't want to think about this.
No, but it's always kind of there. They've gone this long. And
when I say it like
they haven't
that,
won yet, it's always going to be there.
And when I say that, it's more or less, this team has shown its potential several times this year. They really have. Even with as battered as the defense is, they've shown their potential. We know what this team can do. And I think that's why I don't want to think about it. Because you said it, like, you know, resigning yourself to defeat, and you don't like the idea of that. I don't like the idea of it at all. And I think it more or less is just, when I get into playoff mode, it is, I don't care by any means necessary about how you win, about what ends up happening, and knowing how it is going to be. All right, we all have to face our fears here together. Let's step into the wilderness. Because we made it to the point where we were all promised, which is the Bills are back in the playoffs. Now, typically, here comes the painful part. Because Sal does the
right the
night
the,
before Buffalo mm-hmm. Christmas. And we are given a stark reminder at the beginning of his poem of how the Bills season typically is ended.
And that's usually how the new year starts.
And it's how it goes for 31 franchises. Most of them are gone. 14 remain. 13 if you take out Carolina. 12 if you count Pittsburgh. But jokes aside, for 13 more teams, it's going to end painfully.
I'm ready for Sunday. I'm already ready for Sunday just because I don't really want to go through this process now where it also feels like, you know, everywhere I look, it just is it feeling like either this is the Bills' best chance or they're going to get blown out by Jacksonville. And whenever I hear someone say it's the Bills' best chance, it's always leveled then by the caveat of, I actually don't think they're more talented than the Jags. I don't think they're any better than the Jags. But all the pressure has to be on. It almost feels like, Derek, honestly, and we'll get your calls here in a moment, 803-0550. You want to talk Bills, Jags, get your thoughts in on this matchup coming up Sunday at 1. It almost feels like it's a positive to some of these teams for not making the playoffs. Like, Burrow now has the excuse of, well, he's on the Bengals. I mean, just how can you even get past that? Baltimore, they just fired their head coach. We've been talking about that for the last 15 minutes. And then for Kansas City, he's already won, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, they'll be fine. They're going to figure it out at some point. It almost feels like the Bills and Josh Allen, because that's really where all of this kind of stems from, is his legacy, right? He one of the great quarterbacks of his generation, maybe of all time. He's got to win one. He almost feels like he's being punished for making the playoffs. It's just, it's incredible to me. And that's why, like, I've also said, and I said it yesterday, if they do win on Sunday, then the noise should be just as loud of, all right, yeah, they're going. Like, this is an incredible win for them. They did beat a better team on the road, albeit in Jacksonville. I get it. It's not the most intimidating place.
And yet there's going to be enough people that have been hardened by, okay, but now it's the divisional round.
Right, now it's the divisional round.
They typically win a playoff game every year.
Are they going to Denver, that kind of deal?
And, I mean, based on, if everything else goes off on paper, yeah, they'd be heading Denver. But what have we learned this year about this season in particular and paper? This season bought a shredder.
It's made it more fun. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's get to your calls here. Thoughts? Bills, Jags, Sunday at 1. We'll also talk Sabres as well. 5-3 win. Paul Hamilton will join the show at 11:30. Sal Capaccio coming up in about 15 minutes at 10:30 with the Bills getting back to work today. Made a few roster moves, and they're also getting back to practice today, so we'll get our first injury report as well. We'll start off today, though, with Tim on the line. Tim, how are we doing?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks, as always, for having me on. I wanted to weigh in and give my 2 cents this morning. So I'm actually going to the game in Jacksonville this weekend. Yeah. Apparently, I didn't pay attention too much in class growing up because I didn't realize that Jacksonville was only 5.5 hours away from Charlotte, but that's okay. So heading down there with me and the wife and looking forward to the game. I said right when we drew that matchup that the Bills are either going to get bounced in the first round or they're going to go to the Super Bowl. I think that Jacksonville is by far the toughest matchup they could have gotten. But with that being said, I'm really the nightmare matchup that I absolutely hate for the Bills this weekend is Parker Washington against Taron Johnson. Taron has not played his best ball. Parker Washington's becoming a stud, and they just have a lot of ways that they can attack you. But I do like the Bills' chances. Obviously, it's a pick 'em at this point. I think that they're the better team. Not necessarily the better team, but you know where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you guys are talking about this morning because I think it's a fantastic conversation, especially now that Harbaugh just got fired. I've never been a big fire McDermott guy. I think that actually this season has been some of his best overall work.
Agreed.
Since they broke the drought, just because with all the injuries and kind of the cards he's been dealt. But I wanted to get your guys' honest thoughts. Do you guys think that him and Bean are in lockstep anymore? Because he's starting to take some kind of shots at him. And, you know, we heard all about the process early on and those two coming on, hey, we're in lockstep, this and that. And I just don't get that vibe anymore. And I truly think, depending on how this weekend goes, loss or win, that there could be some conversations to be had at the end of the year where they're basically – and I don't think McDermott would be the one to go. But I just want to get your guys' thoughts. I appreciate you having me on. And thanks so much.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate the call. And
enjoy the game, by the way.
Enjoy the game. Yes, most importantly. But I think I've been getting on this for a little while now. Because I'm the person that subscribes a lot to a different Buffalo GM's words. If you say it publicly, that means you've said it in private. It's not a coincidence anymore that there have been several pot shots over this season. So for all of us to just see it publicly, we will all take it what we will. But I'm absolutely not just in agreement, but I've kind of been thinking what might be happening between the two of them. Enough to have mentioned several times now this year of, if there is a power struggle, I'm not alluding that there is not, we've all seen it. If there's an issue between them, we've seen it because we have heard public comments several times now this year. And it's typically been about one position. I'm tired, boss.
Yeah, it has been the receiver room.
I've heard it about one position in particular more than any others. Again, I'm tired. But it's still there. It's something that everyone has seen. Bills fans have our reputation of being the loud, obnoxious, drunkenly type, right? The other thing, though, is Bills fans do pay attention. They can, if you pay attention, you see the tea leaves. You take it for what you will, you interpret it in the way that you want to. But I think enough people have seen, yeah, something's not right between you two. What's good? And the answer to that is I have no idea.
I'm in agreement with that. I mean, it's been going on. I think the first signs were the Carolina game after James Cook had 200 yards rushing and Sean McDermott wanted to make sure that he put it down that he didn't love to run the ball or, you know, that he wanted to be good at both, right? He had never said that he loves to run the ball. He wants to be good at both. And then it's kind of continued on. Also, to that point, I mean, because Derek, you brought up, you know, some of the tweets we've seen from the national people, you know, Bills might be in on Harbaugh. No, because really the dynamic in Buffalo is not the same. The GM is not ultimately the boss of the head coach. I think if you ask most people in there, it's probably vice versa. The head coach is probably the boss of the GM. And if there's a power struggle, I do imagine it would go McDermott's way. Don't know if that's the case. Haven't spoken to either man on that. But I think that's where we're going. I think it's going to be a curious and I think it could be a really interesting offseason for the Bills. I wonder if they're going to bring back either of their coordinators in defensive or offensive. I wonder if there's something going on with Bean and McDermott. And this also is coming after somebody that just watched the John Elway documentary on Netflix, which was pretty good. I mean, it's you know, we're going to love on John Elway for an hour and a half or what have you. But the Dan Reeves stuff where – Elway and Reeves, his first head coach, really did not see eye to eye, especially towards the end of his career. Reeves ends up firing Mike Shanahan. That was another bridge that was burnt between them, and eventually Shanahan comes back, and that's where you do see Elway win his two Super Bowls at the end of his career. Also, to this caller's point, Parker Washington. Yeah, he has come on. Like we talk about Jacoby Myers sort of unlocking the offense. Parker Washington, though, has been a stud for them. Derek, in the final three games of the year, he has 29 targets.
Parker Washington led this team in receiving yards at 847 this year.
Yeah, and the final three games, 145 yards, 115, 87. He also has two touchdowns in those three games. He's been incredible for them.
He's the guy that's been here the whole time. Mm-hmm. But Myers getting here unlocks Washington.
Yeah, he's been awesome. And it is right to bring up Taron Johnson. He has aged, I think, rather quickly. He went from an all-pro nickel corner to now somebody where I think most of us are at times very nervous when he's on the field. They are one of the best secondaries in the sport. I'm excited to see that matchup between, as Dan Orlovsky called it, the hottest passing offense in the NFL versus the hottest defensive backfield in the NFL. With that being said, to Dan's point, he said it yesterday on One Bills Live, you usually will give the benefit of the doubt to the offense because the quarterback can make that perfect throw.
Quarterbacks can make that throw. Offenses are you know, supposed to be constructed in a way, and the game adds more leniency to one side of the football than the other.
Yeah, I agree on the point, though. If they do win, I said it yesterday, if they do win this weekend, I think they will beat everyone else in the AFC.
I think that the winner of this game is going to have a lot to say about what happens next.
Right, because I think we've all gotten to a point, too, with Denver. And Jacksonville's win over Denver, I think.
Denver and New England, I think, are birds of a feather. They're paper tigers that have shown different signs of, okay, you're maybe not it. New England, I don't really think they've had that moment of like showing pure fraudulence.
No, it's just you've beat up a bad schedule.
Except when the Bills came back from 21 points down.
Right, yeah.
Denver, the minute they saw Jacksonville, shriveled.
Yeah.
The Broncos are mighty fraudulent. The only advantage that they should have that I really think good for you that you got it is that they will not go on the road.
No, they've got the one seed, and they do have a legitimate home field advantage with that altitude, the whole thing. Everyone has talked about how bad it is to play in Denver.
Yes, it's tougher to play in Denver. It actually is. It's the altitude's there. The air's thinner. Like, that's science. However, like, series to series, Bo Nix doesn't know which kind of quarterback he is. And nor do Broncos fans until he starts playing that series. It's like, oh, okay, so he's terrible. Oh, okay, so he's great. Oh, okay. Like, he doesn't figure that out. And I think that they really did snack on a lot of cupcakes. Again, don't apologize for who you beat and how you did it. But sometimes the consequences come knocking on the door. And this is actually also true of these two teams, Buffalo and Jacksonville.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I don't want to bring up the schedule stuff too much, because Buffalo, like, realistically, who have you beaten as well? But Jacksonville, throughout this big win streak, it's been double ups of Tennessee, of Indianapolis. You do have the Denver win in there.
And again, it looked more like a team that shriveled by the time they saw a team that was possibly as good as them.
Right. Arizona's in there as well. The Jets are in there. Right. Like, so that's, you can absolutely point to that and go, are they really as good as all the stats make them out to be, or is it just you're beating up on some of the worst teams we've seen? I mean, Indianapolis, when Daniel Jones goes down, did not win another game. They were 8-2. They finished the year 8-9. Tennessee might be the worst team talent-wise in the sport. The Jets may have given up on their head coach. Arizona, Jacoby Brissett was fun. They were terrible, though, with him. That defense was atrocious. And then the Chargers. That is a good win, 35-6, but doesn't Herbert leave that game early at some point? I want to say he leaves that game early.
So, yeah, Herbert does leave that game. Trey Lance has to actually throw 9 passes, I do believe, in that game. So he's in for a considerable amount of time. I think, though, whenever Jacksonville's seen that opponent, like, you know, like, this could be a good match, though, they haven't withered. And I think that's where the difference lies. They were in a tight game with Houston. They were competitive in a couple of those other games. Denver saw one good team and folded. After they started the season the way that they did, the minute they saw Jacksonville, they crumbled. New England, the minute that Bills comeback win happened, people go, okay, what are you? Buffalo has had that moment too. You should have beat Philadelphia.
Yes.
But ready? If they beat Philadelphia, though, what changes? And the answer to that is, what, you get to move up a seed? I don't even know if you do. But that's it.
It is what it is.
That's what changes.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio coming up after this quick timeout. The Bills week does get underway today. We'll get our first injury report later this afternoon. And the Bills also did make a number of roster moves yesterday. We'll get Sal's thoughts on that. We'll also touch on the Harbaugh stuff again. Want to get Sal's thoughts on that as well. We'll do that when we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio. On WGR.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Wednesday. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and that music, of course, does mean on the Western Hotline, Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Great, guys. Good morning. Welcome to the NFL playoffs, playoff week.
Playoff week, we've had a lot of head coaching news. We'll get to that here in a little bit, but right off the rip, the Bills do make a few roster moves yesterday. We did hear from head coach Sean McDermott they were going to be working out kickers yesterday. Sal, they actually made two moves in sort of preparation in case Matt Prater can't go.
Well, they did, but let's remember, so we'll go through it here. So they signed Matthew Wright to the practice squad. So Matthew Wright, he has had, believe it or not, stints 20 different stints with NFL teams.
That's
awesome. Several teams multiple times, mm-hmm. 20 different stints. He actually kicked for the Jags in the 2021 game when they had Urban Meyer's coach and they beat the Bills. He was the kicker for the Jags that day. So he's kicked in that stadium. He has success kicking in that stadium. He had a 55-yarder that day. He's actually 45 of 47 on extra points throughout his career. And I bring that up because obviously that's been an issue the last couple of weeks when the Bills were without Matt Prater and they brought on the kicker Badgley when they had Badgley, right? So Matthew Wright's on the practice squad. The Bills basically, we know this, Sean McDermott told us, he was transparent on Monday. He said they'll have plan A and plan B. Plan A is if Matt Prater can go, he'll play. Plan B is they'll have a guy ready to go. That'll be Matthew Wright. So what they'll do is we'll know Saturday at 4 p.m. because that's when the deadline will be to elevate Matthew Wright from the practice squad. Now, if they do elevate him, that's one less guy they can elevate elsewhere around the roster, obviously. Or they could sign him to the 53. They could release somebody and get two other elevations, right? There's a lot of ways you could do it. But if he's not elevated by 4 p.m., that means that Matt Prater's good to go. I also wouldn't be surprised if they do it, but maybe Matt Prater still kicks, like insurance, in case something happens in warmups. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, the other part of this is they also signed a kicker, Maddox Trujillo, to a future reserve contract. That means nothing right now. That just means that when the new league year begins in March, he will then be shifted to the Bills active roster when it goes to 90 players. That's all it is. He cannot be used at all in 2025.
And Sal, that might have more to do with just, hey, we get another leg in camp in case Tyler Bass is not on a proper timeline.
100%. That's right. We don't know about Tyler Bass's future right now. We know he had surgery. He's not coming back this year. He's on injured reserve. That's not a possibility for the Bills. So this is a really big deal this week, guys. I mean, I think special teams are a major, major component of this game because these are two good teams who I think you're good on good in a lot of ways. Bills are the best run team in the NFL. Jags are the best run defense in the NFL. The Bills secondary is playing really well right now. The Jags are throwing the ball really well right now. On the special team side, the Bills have the number one kick returner in the NFL in Ray Davis. The Jags have a great returner in Parker Washington, a punt returner. They also have a kicker who has set records. He has the two longest field goals, I believe, in NFL history now, 68 and 67 yarder in Cam Little, where the Bills have an issue at kicker because of injuries. So I think special teams is a big deal.
I was going to expound further into that, Sal, because of the Jaguars having Cam Little and how explosive he has been. It's almost annoying to look at a team that can go, 15 yards and then still be a legitimate threat to have a scoring drive?
I agree with you. You know, I was thinking about this, which is that's part of it, right? You'd rather have that, right? If you're a coach, you're like, okay, well, we only need one first down in this guy's field goal range, basically, it seems like, right? I mean, you probably need two, but the other part of it, though, I do wonder sometimes, and I'm not saying Leon Cohen has done this, because look at their numbers. Their numbers are amazing. But I do wonder if you have a kicker like that, if you become a little more conservative when you get in those positions and go, well, we got a great field goal kicker. We don't need to press the button a little bit. You know what I mean? And I wonder if that could sometimes work against you. It's interesting, especially in a playoff game where things are tight. Like, would they, Let's say they're, you know, right at the Bills 40-yard line. You're talking about a 58-yard, even 45-yard line, right? Over a 60-yard field goal. It's, you know, third down and seven. Are they like, you know what? Let's just do something conservative here because we'll kick the field goal. Whereas most teams can't do that, so they're going to try and get the first down. And again, they have scored a lot of points. I'm not saying Liam Cohen thinks that way, but I do wonder in a playoff game if you start to think that way a little bit.
And Sal, I'm really glad you brought that point up because I've been kind of glued to the whole prospect of this AFC bracket because it's a lot of unknown. It's a lot of guys that are either making their first or second go at this. Trevor Lawrence has been in the playoffs before. Liam Cohen has not. And, I mean, we as Bills fans have all kind of seen where Sean McDermott has had to grow a little bit as a head coach. That first AFC championship, they kind of shelled up a little bit in terms of going forward on fourth down and being aggressive, what have you. It's not to say that Liam Cohen becomes a different coach in the playoffs. He could be the exact same, and we could be looking at one of you know, top 10, top 5 guys in the sport. I'm just like, that's where, Sal, I get very excited for this week, and I almost get frustrated, though, because it seems like all the pressure is on a 6-seed Bills team. But I am excited to see kind of how some of these teams, some of these players, react to their first or second go-around here in the playoffs.
Agreed. You know, first-time head coach, I mean, sometimes that is really good for an organization because, hey, you know, you're there and everything's gravy and you're just rolling, and that's great, and you don't know what you don't know. We say that about young teams making the playoffs, right? Like, I think if the Sabres were to get in that position this year, right, and they're actually make the playoffs, it might be, okay, there's two ways to look at it, which is, well, you're in the playoffs now and things can get really, can start gripping the stick. You say, you know what? They're just too young to know the difference. So just go out right there and play, right? And I think when you have a first-time head coach, it's the same thing. Like, he might just be like, hey, man, it's my first time doing this. We made it. We got nothing to lose here. We're playing against all the pressures on the Bills, and I could see that. Or do you kind of think a little bit different? Say, I don't want to make a mistake now. I'm in this position. I agree with you. I think that's a really big part of this storyline. There's so many storylines this week. You think about all the players or the people, I should say, in the organizations who've, you know, been with each other. The Bills let go of their strength and conditioning coach last year, Eric Ciano. You know where he is? He's in Jacksonville. Remember the Bills let go of their special teams coordinator, Heath Farwell, after what happened in Kansas City, 13 seconds. You know where he is? He's in Jacksonville. Ryan Nielsen was let go by the Jaguars last year. I think he was their defensive coordinator at the time. Mm-hmm. You know where he is? He's in Buffalo coaching their defensive line. There's a lot of storylines here.
Gabe Davis revenge game, Sal.
Gabe Davis revenge game. And I actually believe that's a thing here because I don't think it ended very amicably, I'll say that, between Gabe Davis and the Jacksonville Jaguars. They basically chose to not pay him and move on from him very early on in the offseason. And I think Gabe Davis, to me, we're going to talk to Gabe today, I'm sure. I think Gabe Davis would really love to perform well in this game. But, you know, there's a question about who are your receivers in this game. At this point, you know, I would think that the Bills would have Gabe Davis out there, but you never know what they do because there's obviously some numbers and we've talked about that. But yeah, I think that's a thing for Gabe this week.
So Sal, now looking at Jacksonville, and I think many people acknowledge they may be the most complete team in the AFC. Don't want to say the best. I don't even really want to necessarily say they're a great team, but they do seem to be maybe the most complete. I also, though, do want to bring up at least a little bit, because me and Derek were talking about in the last segment, the schedule. I mean, the teams they have played during this win streak are, they doubled up Tennessee, they doubled up Indy, or at least played Indy once, the Jets, Arizona. It hasn't necessarily been, you know, the road that you don't want to travel. It's been, you know, in a way, a lot of cupcakes. They have looked great. You know, the Denver win was very, very impressive. I do wonder, like this is why I do bring up, you know, coming into a playoffs, you maybe don't know what's going on. It does ramp up a little bit that maybe they aren't the best prepared. With the Bills, it is a lot of veteran guys. Some guys, by the way, back in September, we maybe didn't want to see on the field and instead have actually performed very well. Jordan Poyer, Trey White among them.
Yeah, you know, I look at this Jaguars, like the schedule point and all that, and people brought it up and that's fine. And I agree, like the last, you know, eight games are on this 8-game win streak. There are some teams in there where, okay, they've played rookie quarterback, second year inexperienced, but man, they put 35 points up against a very good Chargers defense. They put 34 up against a very good Denver Broncos defense. And I don't care what QB you're playing in the NFL. When you have one game out of eight where you give up more than 20 points, that's it, just one game. That's a really great job on defense. So this is a team that's very good. They also beat the Kansas City Chiefs 31-28. They also beat the 49ers 26-21. They also beat the Texans 17-10, right? Like, they have really signature wins against really good teams. So, yeah, I don't want to discount their schedule at all. I think you could play that game all day. You know, I mean, you play who's in front of you. Just because you play a team that you should smoke and you do doesn't mean that, you know, you wouldn't do it against a team that's a little bit better. I look at how they're playing right now. They're playing really well. They're on a roll. They really believe in their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence. He's pushing the ball down the field. He's doing a great job. He's got weapons. He's got receivers. Jacoby Myers has been a great add for them. They really do a great job of stopping the run. We know that. And then on defense, you know, they don't sack the passer a lot, but boy, they put a lot of stress on you to figure it out after the snap. And that's why they're number two in the league in takeaways.
That comes on the heels of knowing that this season the Bills have not been able to diagnose blitzes as well as they have in years past, Sal. That's going to be something pretty important to watch out for, especially because we heard it from, I think it was D'Amico Ryans after the Houston loss of, you know, they typically leave it a hat on a hat. They try to let these offensive linemen be on an island. So I do wonder if Joe Brady's going to have something prepared there offensively for protection schemes.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he'll have something prepared, but it's a good point you bring up, and I'll say, though, there's a difference between the Texans and pretty much anyone else.
That's also true.
The difference is this, though. The Texans just straight up play man on you. Like, they just go, our guy's better than you. Like, they don't have to do anything smoke and mirrors. They don't move guys around. They're like, we're going to put our guys on the field, and they're going to beat you. And I think D'Amico Ryan's point was, we had confidence in our guys, and they had confidence in their guys, and our guys won, right? They put them on an island. Typically, the Bills are good at that, though. They are good at putting their guys on an island. Deion Dawkins is good. Spencer Brown is good. But typically what has hurt the Bills is when guys say, when teams and defenses say, we're going to move guys around. We're going to do simulated pressure. You don't know where it's coming from. And the Bills have to set it. And that has been an issue for the Bills. You know where it's really been an issue? On the road because of communication. That's the biggest issue the Bills have sometimes with protection is when they're on the road with their communication. And I know that they've had games at home too. Like Philly got to them a little bit. And it's a very good defense, very good front. But when they're on the road, and it's a loud environment, and you have to set the protection, and you have to talk to each other, that's when things can get a little dicey. So this isn't the, you know, most intimidating road environment in the NFL, that's for sure. There's going to be a lot of Bills fans there. That's going to help. But it gets loud there, just like it does any other stadium. And I remember in 2017, they were, you know, they came out, and they do their Duval chant and all that kind of stuff. And if they get up and they start rolling a little bit, then it gets even more challenging.
We'll talk more on this matchup tomorrow. We'll have our first injury report later today as well. But Sal, before we let you go here, I do want to get your thoughts on the firing of John Harbaugh. There was some rumblings going into that final game against Pittsburgh. And, I mean, you had the report out of the Baltimore Sun about Lamar Jackson and all that stuff. It did feel like, though, yesterday all the chickens came home to roost. It sounds like, you know, he didn't want to move off of Todd Monken, and Lamar Jackson's relationship with Monken kind of has started to sour. Just it did feel like everything came home at the same time with his firing after 18 years in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, John Harbaugh's a really, really excellent coach. He has a Super Bowl victory. He's won a lot of games. I just think sometimes what happens is after 18 years, you know, and this can happen after 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, right? It just happens times where people in organizations understand and get to a point where the relationship is untenable anymore. And you want one thing and have a vision for the way things want to go. The other side has a vision for the way things should go. There's friction that happens all the time. Even when you have 18 years of success, throughout that 18 years, I'm sure there were friction along the way. We've talked about it before. Excuse me. Talked about it before with John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin. And, you know, but you get through those things. And the reason why you get through those things is because you have good people who understand that you have to be able to get along professionally and do what's right for the organization and put your ego aside. And I just think that it came time. It felt like that both sides probably realized they were finally better off without each other than with each other. And they both had, you know, just, these things happen, you know, and the only surprise I had, I was not surprised that they moved on from each other. The only surprise I had was he was fired. Like, I thought it would be parting of the ways, mutual, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this tells me that he basically wanted to stay on, but had, hey, I'm staying on, but I want to do this. No, we don't want that, so we're firing you, right? He didn't resign. That was the only thing that really surprised me, was that it was firing, not, hey, it's time that we went our separate ways.
It's early days, but do you have kind of a prediction on where you think he might wind up? I mean, I joked yesterday that the Jets would probably think about firing Aaron Glenn and just try to convince him with all the picks they have. But it also does actually sound like there might be teams that still have a head coach that have reached out to him.
So Schefter reported there were seven teams that reached out, and there were only six teams with openings outside of Baltimore. So that means one team. And I would guess maybe multiple teams. There's still a few teams out there that, you know, people are wondering about what's going to happen with their head coach. I guess the early favorite is the Giants. And that would make sense. I mean, you know, John Harbaugh, when you're in a place for 18 years, the Giants, up until the last, you know, 10 years or so, they've been a very traditional organization. They don't like to fire coaches. It's a more stable franchise. It just fits to have a guy like that and go in and, you know, kind of stabilize everything. Like I said, I think the most exciting would be Cleveland. Keep them in the division.
Oh, right? Yeah.
you have Myles Garrett there to work with. And obviously you have a quarterback issue though, that you don't know unless he really, I don't know what he feels about Shedeur Sanders, right? Like what would that be? Somebody asked me, I was on with Eric Wood's podcast and he said, what's the most attractive opening right now? Well, it's obviously Baltimore now, right? Mm-hmm. But this is because of Lamar, and I would say in the roster and the infrastructure that's built. But outside of Baltimore, I think it's Atlanta. I mean, look at that talent they have on that team, right? And he brought up the Raiders, and I'm like, yeah, but unless you just love Mendoza, then you're walking into the AFC West against the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the Broncos. I don't know about that.
Yeah, you're walking into a bit of a gauntlet there. I like Mendoza, but yeah, that's a tough sell for me. The Giants makes a lot of sense. If you think Jackson Dart's the guy and he showed a lot of promise this year, and then Malik Nabers. Like, we didn't even see Dart play with Nabers at all.
Oh, that's right.
Because he gets hurt. So, I mean, he played that well without their number one guy, one of the better young receivers in football. Yeah, I can see the Giants being a very attractive job. All right, Sal, I'm assuming Sean McDermott speaking a little bit later today?
About an hour from now, guys. We'll have Sean McDermott. And, of course, follow me at Sal Sports on X, and I will have the injury report as soon as he gives it for today.
Sounds good, sir. We'll talk again tomorrow. Have a great day.
All right, you got it, guys.
Thanks, Sal.
Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. Yeah, the Giants probably number two to Baltimore. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we've talked about it for years, too, with the Bills. Like, if the Bills' job ever became available, it immediately skyrockets up. And then everyone else who's graded on a curve, because it's like, oh, well, we're all bad teams, but we've got a lot of picks.
To make a spicy boy even spicier, Stefanski to Baltimore, Harbaugh to Cleveland.
Let's get after it. I'm very curious to see where both wind up. And now, because those two are both available, you also have Mike McCarthy out there. I know people maybe don't love him, but he's done well at both Green Bay and Dallas.
Good enough.
I do wonder how many coordinators are actually hired. I mean, you already seen Matt Nagy as well getting like three or four, you know, interviews. It could be a lot of just old names. It could be the old boys club summer a little bit here with just names you already know, just getting new jobs. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Hour number one rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Happy Wednesday. Hope you're having a wonderful return to work if you had the holidays off. I know it can be a bit of a struggle. Sabres won last night, though, 5-3.
Yeah, baby.
So we do not have a losing streak. That is actually key.
I still think you need to still stack a couple more together. Why? Because the rest of the East is
also winning.
Unrelenting.
They're all also winning. One bad news thing for the Sabres. We'll get to your calls here before we take our next time out. They have not scored a power play goal since December 20th. Not saying that's horrific.
I'm not saying we're back, but we're kind of back.
Yeah, that is tough scenes. 803-0550, the number to call. Bills Jags, Sunday at 1 p.m. Go back to the phones. Jack is up first this segment. Jack, how we doing, man?
Hey, good morning, guys. So I've been listening to your show. I appreciate your comments. I would say that I kind of taken aback by your statement about the Patriots being paper tigers. They pretty much owned us except for one quarter this year. You might argue that the first game was a toss up, but I would say they probably outplayed us. And in the second game, they kind of dominated up until the last quarter. So if they're a paper tiger, I kind of wonder what we are. So just a comment on that. And the second thing, I'd like to know your opinion. If we do beat the Jaguars, let's just say we do. I don't think we are going to. But if we do, who do you think you would like the Bills to play? You had mentioned that, you know, both the Patriots and Denver are not really, you know, they're paper tigers and they're not really that much. But who would you prefer to play if you get past the Jaguars? And I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thanks.
Jack, thanks for the call.
Thank you for the call.
I think you are downplaying a bit the Bills-Patriots this season, the Bills take the lead to start the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
It's the entire second half they dominate.
It's actually halfway through the second quarter when they are now down 21-0 that they turn the Jets on. And no, not those Jets, the actual good ones. But the thing is, and I said it, I'll own the words. I also know that the Bills don't have much of a say on this, of where they get to go. And the most likely outcome is, if they were to win, it's Denver. If the Chargers were somehow to pull off an upset, then
you get Houston or Pittsburgh.
You get Houston or Pittsburgh. But while I do think this year is one of those where I think that the three road teams have a legitimate shot at all winning, I don't love it. But it also is the least likely scenario, the winner of Houston-Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. where I suspect it will be Houston, is the one that I just don't want to see. That's it. I'm not really scared of, and I know how arrogant it sounds, I'm not really scared of anybody but the Buffalo Bills.
I think that's fair. I mean, I've said it already. I think whoever wins this game probably is going to go represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. I do believe that with the Bills. If they can get past Jacksonville, who I think is the most complete team in this bracket, I think you can beat Denver with Bo Nix. I think you can beat New England again. Because also, the first matchup as well, it's pretty much equal in everything but turnovers, and the Bills still just barely lose on a field goal in the last 15 seconds. I don't think the Patriots have dominated them at all this year.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Bills
have shown off most of their issues.
The Bills, more or less in the two games against New England, had pretty infamous ways to shoot themselves in the foot in two separate first halves.
Yeah, so I'm not really that worried about the Patriots. I'd actually love to end their season in New England. I'm actually kind of upset the Bills are not the seventh seed. I would have loved for them to not even have a chance at winning a playoff game and just, cool, have the division. Pop us home. That's really what I wanted.
You stole the division. Go back to your room.
Yeah, go back to your room. Jacksonville, I think, is probably the best team in the AFC. They don't have to be the one seed. I think Denver did earn that, no doubt. But I don't really trust Bo Nix. I don't really trust much of their talent on offense either. And the defense is hurt a little bit going into the playoffs. And then, of course, Pittsburgh, Houston. Houston's defense.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is
kind of just, and that's the thing. Yeah. And that's why I won't say team as a whole. It is Houston's defense that worries me. Their offense, it's not so much. Because even in that game, same thing. The Bills had a chance to win that. They just couldn't do anything against that defensive unit.
And last thought, I know we're late here. Pittsburgh does win these types of ugly games for reasons unexplainable to man.
Oh, giddy up. 803-0550, the number to call. Paul Hamilton coming up at 11:30 for more on the Sabres win yesterday. We'll keep going, though, with Bills-Jags coming up this Sunday when we come back. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.